It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Ed Rudell, and Kel Carson with me in studio. It's going to be a great show. We're going to be talking about Frankenphone. What would you have as a smartphone if you could cobble together whatever you'd like? We're talking about that, about the move to Hotmail. It's got a lot of people hot under the collar, and we'll be answering some questions that you folks have sent in by email as well. Stay tuned. A full Internet Advisor is on the way. Thank you so much for making room in your life for the Internet Advisor. And since March Madness has kind of elbowed us off the court on our flagship station in Detroit, WJR 760 AM, we're delighted to be here on the network with you folks. And regardless of when you're hearing us, we're glad to have you with us. And we can only hope at this point that things have gone well for our Michigan teams. Mr. Eddie Rudell is in-house here. Ed, good to have you here.
Hello, Foster.
And back from the Ice Age, Kel Carson.
Oh, for a limited time only. But I got to tell you, I was able to listen still because I wasn't that far away. I was in a place I have never been before.
Oh.
It was Wooster, Ohio.
Wooster, where is Wooster?
It's about 2 hours south of Cleveland.
Mm.
And it's really wild because you get there by driving on the turnpike for about an hour and a half. Then you get off the turnpike and drive another hour and a half on two lanes.
Oh, my.
And you're in the middle of farm country. There's Amish folks with their carts all over the place. And then all of a sudden, Wooster appears like Oz out of the middle of nowhere.
By the way, if you're ever going to Kokomo, Indiana, it's the exact same experience.
Yeah, it's the same way.
Like sprouts out of the ground.
Yeah, you're driving, it's farm forever, and then all of a sudden, there's a city. Oh, my God.
You know, Oz.
And you know, no witches, no munchkins, but it was a great time down there. It was a very nice
Did you see group. Oz?
I have not yet.
Is it
really good?
Yes, and it holds truthful to the original
storyline, the original storyline.
Oh yes,
I
was really hesitant the first 10 minutes of the movie, and then it opened up, and I see what they're doing. It was very good.
Okay, folks, there's Ed's endorsement for Oz, the wonderful, coming to a theater near you, probably,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
And you were, by the way, Cal, you're working with skating tournaments, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're the tech guy.
I am an official with the United States Figure Skating Association, and we were having a competition down in Wooster, Ohio. It was the Cleveland Invitational Championships.
Mm.
And it was a great time. It was a three-day competition and lots of good skating going on and a great group of people down there supporting that organization.
Originally, you got into this because your daughter was in it, right?
Yeah, I was a victim of a drive-by.
You had to drive your daughter by.
Basically, she started off just trying to find out what it was all about, and then from that point on, the vortex has just pulled me in deeper and deeper.
You know, same way with scouts. There's a parent, and then they realize that what they really want is volunteers to keep the scouting program, and it's only 1 hour a week. That's what they tell you.
Yeah, you got to learn that it's that 80-20 rule, and I always end up falling in the 20 side instead of the 80 side. You know, 20% of the people do all the work.
That's what I was going to say. That's exactly it. For my family, it's soccer, and my daughters have been drawn into that. Speaking of being drawn into conversations, I titled our program today Frankenphone and Hotmail Mess, or Hot Mess. We'll be talking about Hotmail a little later on, but the reason I brought Frankenphone up, and for some of you who have been listening for a while to the Internet Advisor, we began a little over 15 years ago when I invited Gary Baker in to help me with the questions I was having about staying connected to the Internet. Because that's where computers were, and I was on a desktop at the time. Things have changed quite a bit, haven't they, folks? Now, mobile devices, more than ever, are what consumes a lot of our computing.
No, absolutely.
All the three of us work on computers a lot, but I would generally say that if you looked at the general population in the United States in terms of the smartphone use and tablets, etc., mobile computing is where it's going more and more.
Well, and it's a disposable environment. There is no, very rarely do you find the chance of being able to repair a smartphone. So if someone like myself that does installations, upgrades, repairs, and configurations, that doesn't exist in the mobile environment, unless you're in the corporate environment and you have some security and encryption.
And then, Cal, you are right now, because of the work that you do with GM, you are kind of the Apple apostle, or the person at least who is helping with this BYOD phenomenon, which is bring your own device.
That is correct. And more and more you see things like, you know, folks want to bring in their iPhones. They want to be able to connect to corporate networks when possible, it's allowed. You know, of course, you know, everybody's laptop has to be able to connect to those corporate networks as well. But most of the laptops are issued by, well, they're all issued by the company themselves.
How about tablets? Are they making a dent?
Tablets are making a dent as well. Yeah. Most of them are, you know.
Or the iPads.
iPads.
Right.
But there are some slates. There are some of the other Android devices are coming in as well. Yeah. So the mobile computing thing is very, very big. And it continues to grow and continues to gobble up bandwidth. And it's created, in my opinion, a problem with bandwidth because, for example, I was at a function last weekend. They have Wi-Fi in the facility. But my God, trying to get on it, you might as well just forget it. And you think about it, the average person, if they're carrying a laptop computer with them, will have two devices that are Wi-Fi capable. And you multiply that by the number of people in any particular facility, and everybody's
just recently, I think it was 2 weeks ago, Samsung launched its Galaxy 4 in New York, and one of the complaints, besides the show being awful, was that nobody could connect. None of the reporters could connect. To the,
well, you know what most people don't realize.
This is a Samsung event.
Yeah. Well, what most people don't realize is traditionally Wi-Fi environments, like the ones you have at home, unless you have one, a wireless router that you've purchased in the last couple, 2 years, 3 years, they're usually limited to only 30 devices. Good luck trying to get anything more than that. So you're not going to be able to go to a place unless they put a lot of work into the architecture to support
that
large number of people.
Here's what we're going to focus on, though, guys. With this Frankenphone concept, what I'd like to do for this part of our program is to talk about if you could design a phone that had the best elements of all the devices that are out there, what would it look like? That's what we're going to come back to talk about in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor. Thanks so much for joining us here for the Internet Advisor and for downloading us off of our homepage or for getting the podcast through iTunes and some of the other programs that are out there. Just quickly, to set things up again, guys in studio here are Eddie Riddell and Cal Carson, and we're talking about a Frankenphone. And just to set it up again, by the way, if you go to our homepage to internetadvisor.net, you'll see our show notes, and it kind of sets it up. In the past few weeks, there have been a couple of examples of well-known tech writers who have either have used a different phone than the one that they were. For instance, Andy Anatko has been a writer on Apple products. He's part of Mac Break Weekly, which is a great podcast with Leo Laporte. He tried out an Android phone and then wrote about why he was switching from iPhone to Android, which led for cries of heresy, lynch him.
Oh, my gosh, I bet.
It was really bad. I mean, it was terrible. It was a shame in some ways because he was trying to put the case of, look, I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's just that this suits my purposes better. But he's been such a spokesperson, kind of an icon of iOS.
Well, he was ready to grow up. I'm sorry. No. Cal is giving me the stink eye. I had to put
that
in
there,
though.
Shot across the bow already. One of the other ones.
You know, when you're the champ, you always have to defend the crown.
Oh, that's how it works, huh? The other one was Lex Fridman, who was a writer for Macworld, and he tried for a month to try the Windows Phone, Windows Phone 8. I have been using the Windows Phone 7 for about 8 months now. And we were hoping that Shane could be with us today because he switched to a Windows Phone 8.
And he loves his Windows
Phone. He loves it. He loves it. Now, Ed, you use an Android phone, right?
Yep.
Okay. And, Cal, you use an iPhone, right?
It seems logical.
Primarily. As I said, I've been using a Windows Phone.
Yes.
And I also have an iPhone, which I'll be going back to, by the way, this coming week.
Really? Why?
Well, we'll talk about that as we go on. But reading these articles, listening to these commentaries, what it struck me was that it's not that there's any one particular phone that is necessarily better than the other, although I think you can say that to some extent. Mm-hmm. But in terms of systems, okay, operating systems, like Windows Phone system versus Android versus iOS, which is the Apple devices. But each one of them have some characteristics that I found I really liked. And let's talk, for instance, about screen size.
Okay.
Cal, you've been using an iPhone 4S or a 5?
I've been using the 4.
The 4.
Yes.
Okay, I have 2. And that is a small screen. It's a
3.5 inch.
It's about 3.5 inch.
Yeah, almost 4.
And have you used a bigger screen phone?
Yes. I mean, I've touched other ones.
But you haven't used them?
I don't use them.
He's been faithful.
How about you, Ed? Have you used bigger screen phones on your Android?
No. I picked up Android. It's the largest screen device I've had. You know, I had Microsoft phones in this one, and I've been able to play with some of the iPhones. But no, except for some of our engineers have that. Annie, our call screener, has that humongo phone. It looks like a shoe phone. It's about the size of, you know.
Is that the tab?
You're talking about
Annie,
that surfboard?
Hold that up. What is that?
That Samsung surfboard, isn't it?
Oh, the Galaxy Note. Okay, yeah. The Galaxy Note. Galaxy Note, which is a big phone. Now,
it looks like
billboard. I found in using the Windows phone that with a 4.3-inch Nokia phone, I really love the bigger screen. I find it much more useful for reading mail, for especially
and
going to websites.
It's not much heavier. It's not much heavier.
Well, this one, the Nokia happens to be a lot heavier, but that's a problem Nokia has.
Okay.
Have you guys used bigger screens? Have you, I mean, seriously used them? And what do you think of that notion of a bigger screen being better than a smaller one?
Here's the deal. I've got like really big biscuit grabbers. My hands are huge. Okay, so the larger screen would probably work better for me, but I've gotten used to using the smaller screen. And the only other thing that I like better about the smaller screen is not necessarily because it's Apple, but what I like better, I can use it with one hand. Where when you start getting with the bigger screens, you have to use both hands. And I've watched
folks, you play guitar, and then you can, your thumbs are naturally larger.
I've watched people who thumb type, and I'm amazed by that because I can't do that. But, the larger the screen, I guess it's easier to be able to do the typing if you text a lot. Yeah. But I try not to text because I don't like it.
Right. Yeah, and I chose the Android, specifically because it had a slide-out keyboard. I wanted a fully functional keyboard.
I didn't want to
deal with, the touch. Right. And I probably could have gotten used to it, but I wanted the slide-out keyboard.
Yeah. Okay, so that was another alternative to it. What seems to be happening is that we are going to the bigger devices in general. That seems to be where they're shifting. Mm-hmm. With the iPhone 5, for instance, which is longer, if not wider.
Isn't that great? Let's make the laptop smaller and the phones bigger.
And somewhere we'll meet in the center and that'll be it. That'll
yeah,
be the device.
Somewhere in the middle is a tablet. And if you put a phone into a tablet, I think you've ran right to the very thing.
They've done it with some of the tablets that are out there right now. They put phones into them.
Well, if you use Skype on a tablet, you can do that. So, I mean, you could get there.
No, I mean, literally something, but hold it's like taking pictures with an iPad,
It's crazy.
Hold the thing up to the side, like a side of beef.
I'll give Apple that. And, a lot of kudos to Apple for a lot of things. But they have beautiful cameras on all their devices.
And that is another thing that has become a big deciding factor.
But, the number one factor, I feel, with Apple is the consistency. You don't have 6 or 12 different manufacturers with 5 different models each of Android. With Apple, you know what you're getting. It is controlled by the manufacturer, the hardware, and the software.
Now, you have the same thing with the Windows Phone platform.
Not really.
Yes, you do. You do really have it.
Well, okay. Well, that's something new. I can't say that about Android.
No, and but that has been the problem with Android.
And I can't say that about previous versions of the Microsoft OS, like the 7 and the 7.1 and the 6.
Yeah.
Every manufacturer put their own flavor of Microsoft
they
on top.
They seem to have imposed that interface with the tiles on it.
And I think I think they're taking a lesson from Apple on that.
They
have to. That's what customers are demanding.
Because one of the problems with Android is you have so many different devices. Somebody was asking me, Cal, about whether to buy an iPad or whether to buy one of the many different Android notebooks that are out there. And I was saying, yes, you can. You may get one that's cheaper, et cetera, and comparable in terms of all of its functions, except that each one of them is going to have a different skin on it. And you're going to have to cope with the fact that they put their own bloatware on it.
Well, the bottom line is there is no one device that does everything great the way you're going to want it to do. You're going to have to find that device that does most of the things you want great as possible and be able to settle for whatever it doesn't do.
So, and that's what the Frankenphone is about. If you had the ability to... Right. To choose the best features of each phone that you could manufacture your own. Like, I like the consistency of the iPhone. I love the cameras. And I like its Siri interface. And on a board, but, you know, I want a slide-out keyboard. Right. And, oh, I want live tiles like the Microsoft.
There you
go.
If
you could pick and choose the best between each.
Because I have, and that's exactly what we're kind of talking about here. One of the problems I have with both iOS, the iPhone, and with Android, and Ginny has just gotten an Android phone, mm-hmm. Is that you've got all these icons that are presented to you, and sometimes pages of icons. Whereas with the Windows phone, that metaphor that they have of the live tiles and being able to shrink the tiles, you can pretty much put everything you want on a single screen. And it also gives you live updates to a certain extent.
It really reminds me of the old Windows 3.1 days. Remember that? How you used to have program groups and you used to have all those icons would be on your main screen when you came up. That's what the Android phones and the Apple phones remind me of, is all of those icons.
People have talked about it. I don't know if you run into it, Cal. I was hearing Lex Friedman from Macworld talk about it. There's a problem with the iPhone. I have folders. So when I go to find an application, it's like, what folder did I put that one in?
Oh, very good.
Was it under travel or entertainment or news or
social?
That's true,
but I mean...
But we just don't know how to fix that. I mean, what other interface can you have?
Well, with Windows Phone, at least you can, alphabetically, you can look for them.
But the point of the matter is, there is no one system that's going to do everything the same way, and henceforth that Frankenphone idea that you're talking about. I mean, for example, and it's for every device that's ever came out. I would love my Mac laptop to have one feature that Windows has: cheap price. Aside from that, I don't need it. There's nothing else that I need. You give me a Windows price on my Mac, I'm good.
I want to hear about what phone speaks to you best. When we come back, voice technology seems to be becoming more and more important. Let's talk about Siri and Google Voice. Windows Phone really doesn't have anything, and that's probably one of the criticisms of it. That is comparable to either of those. But let's talk about that and some other things as we're kind of cobbling together our own Frankenphone here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. Foster Brown, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. We're talking about Frankenphones, and that's just kind of a fun way of talking about what we like best and worst about phones. And
it's alive!
If we could cobble it together. Well, in some ways, I think, you know, as silly as the notion of Frankenphone sounds, I'm thinking it. You know, this is kind of the direction I think phones are going. I think we kind of peaked with the devices. I don't think we're going to get much revolutionary in the devices. I think it's really now going to come down to that whole ecosphere. You kind of referred to it, Ed, like Apple, that everything works with iOS or with Google with Android. Mm-hmm. Everything was within the Google atmosphere, Google Docs, the Google Play Store, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything's meant to work together. Mm-hmm. Release. You put your one Google or Gmail ID in there and suddenly, kaboom, everything opens up to you. You got your Chrome settings and everything else. So that's becoming more and more the thing. So it's going to be a bigger device, somewhere between 4.5 to 5, somewhere in that range, I think. And I think even Apple, I think, is going to move to that in one of the new iterations of their phone.
But it's almost getting to the point where they're the size of the car phones that came out in 72, except without the battery pack.
Yes.
You know?
I use one of those things. I know exactly what you mean.
But see, for me, a phone lately, or a smartphone, or whatever you want, because, you know, calling it a phone really is a bad way to go, because probably the last thing you do the most of on it is talk on the darn thing.
What's that ringing noise? Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's like I'm doing a class reunion with some of my cohorts from school, and they all go, well, we can text you this. Don't text me. Call me.
Cal, my family, the generation, you know, my daughters and my grandchildren, they're all texting.
Yeah.
My daughter, even Ginny is learning. Excuse me, Ginny. Even Ginny, my wife, is learning to text. Pretty much text. That's it. I don't call them anymore because they don't want to talk. They want to text.
I would love to be able to shut the phone portion off on my daughter's phone and just see if she would even notice it.
I don't think so. I doubt it. I doubt
it.
I doubt they would. But isn't it, let's see, one of the things I think, though, and tell me what you think about this, is that with the phones, it's not even so much that ecosphere or the system that the phone belongs to, but it's the applications that you can run in it. And I'll tell you why I said that.
I think it's both, but go ahead.
Because with
Windows, and it's also carrier. A lot of people are...
The carrier is, yes, another big part of it. But beyond that, okay, let's say if you had the perfect carrier, I think it would be the applications. Because, for instance, one of the things that's driving me away from the Windows Phone 7, and I think it would be even with Windows Phone 8, is the applications I need don't work or are so badly configured that, for instance, there's one that I use that I cut and paste in. I can't do it on the Windows Phone. I just can't anymore.
It's got to be that
$100. But on the Android and on the iPhone, it works perfectly.
It's got to be that $100 motivation to have for developers. Man,
isn't that ridiculous?
Now, what's this?
Microsoft, and I put it on our news notes this week, Microsoft is going to offer $100 to any developer who will develop an app, either for the iPhone, the Windows Phone 8, or Windows 8, the desktop platform, or the tablet platform. $100. And somebody said, what we do not need is a million $100 applications for Windows Phone 8. We need $100 million applications. In other words,
yes,
make the darn things work well.
Well, what we're dealing with is app-centric mentality right now.
That's what it's coming down to.
And we need people to put it all together.
Exactly.
And the iPhone did a lot of that.
I think it has. And now Android as well. Android as well.
And Google is doing that as well. You're right. And Microsoft, although you'd think they'd be on top of things, they are just
2 years behind everybody else, whether it's the phone or the tablet.
I mean, the tiles are a great thing.
Oh, wonderful.
But they missed... Go in the back end and fix all the other stuff.
We want
to copy paste. I'm sorry, Gil.
Yeah, it's not a problem. They're just in the weeds. You know,
they
want to play the game and they're trying to run to it, but they can't seem to get that tire out of the rut and up on the road. And I'm sure eventually they'll figure out a way to do it. But it's really
tough.
You know
what this strikes me? It's like a former athlete, you know, who's kind of gone to seed. You know, they had their days of greatness.
You mean the term also ran?
Well, that's what they've become. In many ways. But now there are still more than a billion PCs out there running Microsoft systems.
Of course.
Okay? That is their problem. There's no incentive. I don't think they have as much incentive to be as aggressive with the phones and the tablets and everything else to make it really work. They've taken a bold gamble with Windows 8.
And unfortunately, Shane's not here to defend it because he loves his Windows 8 or Mobile 8 phone.
Next time he's on, I'm going to ask him this. I would challenge him with a question: how well are the applications working on your Windows Phone? Because I have found some.
It really depends.
Well, and all depends on the customer's expectation.
Expectations and what they use.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to use it as a, you're in the car, you're in the passenger seat, and you want to be able to cut and paste a few documents and do some editing.
Mm-hmm.
It may or may not be able to do that. Where someone else's expectations is that if I want to play Angry Birds going down the road, when I'm, you know.
Well, one of the reasons I say I think that the apps are going to make the difference is Nokia is a very good example of that. They have great phones in some ways, like they have this wireless charging. And I think that's one thing that the other phones are going to come up with.
Yeah,
HP
had that too, and it just, there wasn't enough to save the company. They came out
I'm afraid for Nokia, that may be it. Yeah. But Nokia has some incredible apps. For instance, Nokia Drive.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's one of the devices I love on that device. But the problem is that the phone that uses it is a brick. The battery life is horrible. And I've heard that the Windows 8 version of it, the Lumia 920, bad as well. So I don't want to spend all my time trashing Windows Phone. But I think that what's really key more in this is that the applications are going to make a big difference. Is there a key application that you want? Does it work on that phone? Can you use it easily? And does it work on that phone?
You're asking the question.
Well, I'm almost saying that's got to be it. That's got to do it.
Well, yeah, I think that's a big part of it too. But I think Ed has also made a point that makes that's in consideration with it too, and not necessarily the ecosystem, but the carrier. For example,
good point.
Both my daughter and my wife, I got them both on Sprint, mm-hmm. and I'm so glad I have my daughter on Sprint more than anything else, and now, after a couple of months, I'm glad I have my wife on Sprint, because the one thing that they give me that the other carriers don't do is unlimited data for a flat price.
And that's become a huge issue. Eddie, you were...
Right, and that's because they're in third or fourth place. If they were not, if they were like Verizon, AT&T, and they were in first and second place, then they could charge you for the data rates. They have to have some incentive, and that's a great incentive to pull them to Sprint.
Big
exactly.
Incentive.
But if they were in first place, you think they'd be offering that?
Mm-mm. No, but you know... Once again, it all depends. What is it that you want from the device? Just like, does it have the app that you want? Does it have the functionality that you want? Is it the form factor, the one that you want?
Right.
Is it the service that you get is the one? You know, so there's so many different things. This may be the number one phone, but
he's holding up an iPhone, by the
way. But if it doesn't do what you want it to do and that Android does it better, then what's the better phone for you?
You know, it was interesting that I got an Android device for my wife. Excuse me. I just got an Android device for my wife because it was simpler. There were less things that she was presented with to work with. And I think for some users, that's very important. You can configure it so there's less things that confront her when she
does. Every device she have a big Fisher-Price logo on the back of it?
Get out of here.
Well, one of the things I was going to say about the iPhone and what makes it so attractive is a lot of people don't like paying for the phone and paying $1,200 for a phone over the life of a two-year contract. With an iPhone, you can go out and buy it, and then you can get yourself a $40 data plan or $40 a month plan because you've already purchased the phone, and you're not going to be stuck with $120.
That's another subject, I think, with phones. Yeah.
And you don't have that option as readily with Androids and Microsoft devices to buy the phone up front.
As easily as
you could go to an Apple store and buy an Apple phone and then go to the carrier.
You think we're going
to
get to a place, though, where that may be more of the, you know, that you buy the phones and then come in?
I would love to go to the European style of phones.
I would too.
Where you just buy the phone, you walk around, go like, this week I think I want to be on Orange, or whatever carrier. Yeah. You buy the card, stick it in there, bang, you're on your way to go. Next week, you know, hey, I didn't like that carrier. I'll go over to
another one. I'll switch SIM cards out.
Over there, I'll get Yakusuki next time. I'll go to a kiosk and get a Yakusuki SIM card.
Do you think that'll ever happen in the U.S. with the likes of Verizon and AT&T?
I don't think so. I think they're too powerful.
I think over the years,
and the regulations.
What'll happen is because I'll give you a perfect example. There's this little country over on the other side of the globe called China, and I think eventually China, just like we go all over the world marketing our stuff, the Chinese phone industry is going to say, you know something, we're going to just put up some satellites and we'll give you service over there. And guess what? We sell the little cards.
Yep.
And then the guys over here are going to go like, oh, I guess we got to join the party.
Oh, you know, I never thought of that.
That is a very, you know, you've mentioned something, Kel, and I think this is something we often leave out of our discussions when we talk about technology. The United States is not defining the cutting edge anymore.
Nope.
The markets are the ones that define the cutting edge. And by that, I don't mean that we aren't developing cutting edge devices. But what I mean is that the demand is what's really going to drive.
Yeah.
You want a cutting edge device. You go to Japan or you go to China and you see what they're walking around the streets on.
And that there's a huge market that keeps on booming over there, that will end up driving it. So maybe that's the silver lining that's out there. Going to take a quick break, and when we come back after this, Mike Brennan is going to be with us with our Michigan Tech News of the Week and then some thoughts on the switch between Hotmail to Outlook. Before we go too much further, I'd like to recognize some of the people who make this program happen behind the glass, as we say. Annie Nichols and Rich Lisinski, thank you so much for helping us back there. Annie's going to be setting up some of our... we're going to be talking with some folks who have emailed us with questions about their computers and things like that, and we'll be talking with them the second hour of our program. Right now, however, we're delighted to have with us on the air on a weekly basis, Mike Brennan with MichiganTechnologyNews.com. Mike, how are you doing today?
Great, Foster, and yourself?
Very well, thank you. I'm in the midst of March Madness, but you've got a lineup of some very interesting topics, so why don't you just launch into that?
Well, Transformers is coming back to Detroit. They're going to be filming in the spring. I'm not sure exactly when. Hopefully, there will be a spring. And they get a $20 million film incentive from the Michigan Film Office. So if you're driving down the freeway past a semi and it turns into a robot, you'll know they're filming. And then we also have our friends at Business Leaders from Michigan. They just came out with a report saying that, well, your businesses are now short of workers, both short-term and long-term. And it gets back to the skill factor. I mean, they just can't find the people that have the skills for today's technical jobs and technology jobs, and worse, by 2025, assuming that, you know, this winter goes away by then there's going to be some 900,000 more college graduates needed to, with these kinds of skills to fill these jobs. So,
in the state of Michigan?
Yeah. Of course, 2025 is a ways off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just everything. All the modern jobs today require that you have a technology background. I mean, the good jobs. I mean, mm-hmm. there's still basic jobs that don't. But even factory work, you got to run a
yes.
CNC machine. You got to know what you're doing, right? You know?
Absolutely. So.
Okay, then we also have a sort of good news, bad news story. Once again, gridlock in Lansing, just like we have in D.C. The Obamacare, we'll just call it that because everybody knows it by that. It was either the state was going to build an exchange for insurance or the feds were going to do it. Well, because of we have a shall we say, very conservative Republican majority in both the House and the Senate in the state here, and they just didn't like any idea with Obamacare at all, and so they rejected $31 million in federal funds to set up a hybrid state-federal partnership. So Michigan's on its own, or excuse me, the feds are on their own now to come in and set up this exchange anywhere they want.
Did I see, Mike, that was going to cost us as a state $8 million?
Yeah, we're on the hook for $8.3 million for the IT needs. So, I mean, I don't get this. I really don't. Yeah. I mean, at some point, you have to be a statesman rather than a politician, but we seem to be in short supply there. So,
Mike Brennan, by the way, is with us here with Michigan Technology News. MichiganTechnologyNews.com is the source for a whole bunch of these articles that we're talking about right now. You can go into much more depth with them. Mike, I also noticed that Pure Michigan, which has been looked like a pure success, is kicking off.
Yeah, they've had really great success with that program. I wrote some stories for Bridge Magazine analyzing that, and it's really one of the best programs in the country for promoting a state. And, of course, the angle that they came to over a series of campaigns was, you know, one thing we do have in the state is great natural resources, and hence the name Pure Michigan. And so, yeah, $13 million. A lot of that's aimed at getting people, you know, in Chicago or Cleveland or, mm-hmm. you know, the drive-in people to drive up here versus folks flying in. They've had a lot of success, though, you know. And once you get exposed to, particularly Michigan, summers. Mm-hmm. When I lived in lots of places, there's no place better than Michigan in the
mm-hmm.
summer.
Mm-hmm. Especially those delicious summers on the lake shores of either Michigan or Huron or even up into the UP, provided you don't get the black flies.
Yeah, they're like the size of small sparrows. So
they are. And you got a final story for us about a botnet that has found a way of like putting a straw into the advertising pool of money.
Yeah, this is crazy. I had to read this a couple times because this is my business, and I thought, what angle am I missing here? But yeah, they've got a botnet that ties up 120,000 host machines, and it's you know, a lot of these ads are paid on the click. And so they were triggering false impressions and then siphoning off that ad money to the tune of $6 million a month.
Wow. So what they do essentially then, Mike, is that they kind of go in there and they create fake sites that really aren't getting you where you want to go?
Well, it's more fake ads.
Fake ads, really.
You know, so, I mean, they have through the process of the scripts, that there, you click on the link, but you're really clicking on a different link, and it's registering elsewhere. It's kind of complicated, and like I said, I had to read it a couple of times myself because I was trying to figure out how I could make money with that.
But they've snuck in there to the tune, as you said, of $6 million a month. If anything, it kind of says that, you know, the bad guys are finding more and more inventive ways of making money out of this. Hey, well, maybe one last story about Michigan Biotechnology Institute.
Yeah, they're kind of deal with Michigan State University. Now, this is going to be really aimed at the biomass and fuels and chemicals and feeds and materials, and that's really one of MSU's strengths. But this other group is going to come in and do the proof of concept, the initial, you know, where you got a great idea, but hey, will people buy it?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do that part of it to test it, And then if it does work, they're going to combine forces and then try to commercialize it.
Wonderful. So that's another great resource that we have in our state of Michigan. They talk about that great arc of universities that goes from Detroit along the 696 corridor and all the way out to the west out there to Grand Rapids where you are. Mike Brennan, again, great. Thanks you for putting together a great set of stories for us. Again, if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, you can click off to mytechnews.com, and there Mike will have all these articles plus many more that delve into technology in our state, both all the impact from the national level and also locally, as that last story about Michigan State University. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Foster. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you very much for being around here. Mike, of course, is going to be on with us every week, bringing us those special stories from the state of Michigan. It's amazing to find out how the bad guys are getting so clever about.
Well, you don't wonder why so many of our computers are slowing down and stuff like that. You just wonder,
Gary sent us those three phishing scams the other week. Did you see any of those, Cal, that he sent them to us?
No, I didn't.
They were frightening. They were so good. They looked exactly like, what were they from? They were from one of the banks, Chase Bank it may have
Chase
been.
Chase or Bank of America.
Yeah, and another couple sites. They looked exactly like, AT&T was the other one, mm-hmm. And it looked exactly like the email you get for AT&T. And when you clicked on one of those links, like view my bill, it was poisoned. And it took you off someplace you didn't want to go execute stuff.
I got one just this past week, and it said it was from Bank of America. And says, hey, you know something? We just did that transfer of $3,000 for you. And if you click here, you can see the receipt. Now, I looked at it, and I said, because it was a zipped file.
Yes.
Okay. So,
excuse me, folks. That's very important for people who are listening to this to hear that. That .zip. If you see that anywhere in an email, it's like a bomb. You pull the pin on a grenade.
Be a legitimate way of compressing and sending multiple files or a single large file to people, but now it seems to be the payload preferred by hackers, and most people are using Dropboxes and stuff like that.
So I took this piece of email and I opened it up on a Mac instead of a Windows machine, because inside the zip file is an EXE file.
That's right. And which, by the way, folks, for those of you who Cal and I are both on Macs, won't open.
Exactly.
On a Mac. Just won't open. Won't go anywhere.
And I didn't even bother double-clicking on the EXE file because I didn't want to find out. But I did report it to Bank of America, and they say, hey, you know something? This is the third call today. I go like, well, there you go. So we sent it to abuse@bankofamerica.com. If you just forward it to them, they'll take it from there and work
a lot of major websites, if you suspect you've got a piece of spam, send it on. Check. Most often the companies have a place that you can go to either the call or a website you can send it to. Hey, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got some great emails that you folks have sent out. We're going to be talking with some of the people who have sent us those emails. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about is the switch that's going on right now from Hotmail to Outlook and the outrage that some people have at that. We'll be back to talk about that in our second hour of the Internet Advisor. So please do stay tuned. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Braun. Ed Riddell and Cal Carson are in studio, and Gary Baker has a day off today. We are going to be answering some email questions that have been sent to us during the week by folks like you out there. And we're going to talk with a couple of the people who sent those emails in and handle some of the other ones that people have sent in about things like, for instance, the switch from Hotmail to Outlook and other outrages. Back with that in just a moment. Hello there, Foster Braun, and we have Ed Riddell and Cal Carson in studio today. Gary Baker's off. And this part of our program, we're going to be answering some questions that have come in to us through email. By the way, for those of you who have downloaded our podcast to hear this, either from our site or through one of the subscriptions to a podcast, we were preempted this week on our flagship WJR 760 AM in Detroit because on the Saturday, MSU won and are now part of the Sweet 16. And University of Michigan also won, so we're going to have two Michigan teams in the Sweet 16.
So that means we're preempted next week.
We don't know yet. But for people who are listening to us, this may be even a week after in some cases. But the reason I'm telling you this is that you can still get questions to us, because we, every week, faithfully, we record a program. And we use the email through the Contact Us link on our homepage at internetadvisor.net to get the questions from you that we can then help you with. And we'll be talking during this hour with a couple of people who have sent those emails in. But guys, this was kind of typical of an email that I got this week about Hotmail. It says, Outlook took over my Hotmail. And this is in capital letters, so it's like shouting, I hate it. Is there any email provider that I can use that is more like Hotmail? And that was from a listener named Angela. And another friend of mine also sent this out, that Hotmail has alerted me that it's now going to be changing over to Outlook. I don't like Outlook because it's very difficult to access when I'm out of town from other computers and my cell phone. On that, I don't understand
and
that.
I think they're misinterpreting it, because they have a product called Outlook, which is a corporate email system. And you can, it could probably be configured so that you could download your content, but this is still web-based content.
And that has been a problem that Microsoft has done. They've got the two, you can easily confuse the Office application of Outlook, which is very complex, got its calendars and contact list, et cetera, et cetera.
And very corporate-centric and very useful.
Absolutely.
And for me, in the corporate environment, it's about time they actually brought it in and made it look like their other flagship products. But I can understand the confusion. It is still web-based mail. You go to, you could still go to Hotmail.com or Outlook.com and log in with your Microsoft Hotmail account. It'll just...
Now, I suspect that a lot of the grief that's coming from the Hotmail listeners is because Hotmail has been around since forever. Now, Akel, did you have a Hotmail account? Have you ever had one?
I have one right now.
Yeah, and Ed, I think you do?
Yep, I sure do.
It was one of the first, I think maybe the first email account that I got, because it
thought,
was free.
I thought biz.
Well, but no, but I mean web-based, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
Web-based email,
yes,
which I could access from anywhere, and that's what I loved about it. You still can do that, folks, by the way, even though it's now called Outlook.com. I still sign into Hotmail.com to get my email.
You know, and if you really like web-based mail and you don't like the way Hotmail looks, or Live.com, or whatever that's whatever name you use into Hotmail. Well, no, I use Live.com
That's right.
But, I mean, if you don't like that but you still want to use a web-based solution, you know, your own internet service provider will have a web-based email solution as well. You just have to change the address, but it'll still be a web-based solution.
Oh, that's a good point.
And in many ways, I really like the new look of Outlook, because now this is Outlook.com, okay? Or in other words, if you have Hotmail, you go into your Hotmail account, that's where you'll end up. Because you can, if you go up to the top where it says Outlook, it'll take you off to your contacts, it'll take you to a calendar, to SkyDrive, where you can store stuff. I think there's 5 gigabytes of storage up there.
Very similar to the Gmail.
Very similar to Google.
Except when you're in the email and the calendaring, it looks just like Outlook, Microsoft's enterprise flagship application.
Oh, mine doesn't look like Outlook, but evidently I'm doing something wrong here, because it still looks like just your regular everyday old web-based mail to me.
Then yours is, well, it is web-based mail, but I mean, it's going to be, the look will change to the...
Yeah, they're migrating.
They're migrating people over, and that's why
on
they're
getting...
On a
weekly basis, 50,000 a day or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Well, mine is different than it was before, but it's not strikingly different.
Do you have that in the upper left-hand corner, or right-hand corner? Yeah, left-hand corner?
Up in the left-hand corner, I do have that Outlook option where if I click on it,
there's a drop-down.
I get those three, those four Fisher-Price looks, and then, but I mean, it doesn't change how I probably shouldn't do that to Fisher Price. They're really nice people. But it's those big block icons.
So
I'll say
snarky.
It that way.
Listen, buddy, when your eyesight gets to my place, you'll understand.
Well, next thing you know, you're going to have a computer with large keys on it, too, right?
Ooh,
well,
now there's something.
You know, and one thing I thought of is that Microsoft might be, how can I say this? They're consolidating their offerings, right? They're offering a product called what? Office 360?
Office 365.
365, right. And this looks very similar.
They're trying to homogenize the look, so yes. Everything looks the same. They're web-based apps, much like Google Docs. Actually, they are they're pretty much the same thing, although they have a lot of the web, Office capabilities, like Word and Excel and PowerPoint that you can get online for free now, by the way. You can get those things.
Yeah.
They have that same kind of look, Fisher-Price look.
Now, the one thing I do notice is different when I'm in Outlook.com is before, on the left-hand side, I would be able to see my contacts, and I'd have a scroll window on the left-hand side below my inbox that I could scroll through my be my contacts.
Right.
Now that's not the case. Now no. I have
now you have to
junk
go up
mail.
Top.
Yes, you have to go up on top.
And there you'll have mail, people, calendar, and SkyDrive. So people is, and by the way, that works with the Windows Phone metaphor as well, and with the tiles.
And I think
8.
What we're dealing with here is change.
Yep.
People do not like change, and
plain and
but it's free. Unless you got a paid one, then you really don't have anything to, you know, it's free.
Hey, when we come back, guys, we've got some folks we're going to talk to on the phone who have sent us email. I also have a question for you. When you're trying to make a decision about between devices that you want to buy, is there any place you can go online to get some help making decisions? A friend of mine trying to decide between an iPad and a MacBook Air, for instance. Let's talk about that when we come back with the Internet Advisor. Just a reminder for you, by the way, that if you would like to get a question answered by the staff here at Internet Advisor, some experienced tech people like Ed Riddell and Cal Carson, Gary Baker, or myself, or Shane Hamlin, simply send us an email. And the way you do that is go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net. In the upper right-hand corner, there is a Contact Us button. Click on that. By the way, for those of you who try to get into our forums, we've been having some problems with it. And essentially, we're still trying to iron out the problems with the software in the background. So just email us directly. And we'll get to you just as quickly as we possibly can. Right now, let's say hello to Dorothy. Hi, Dorothy. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to the Internet Advisor and to your little dog.
And your little dog, too.
Stop.
See, the dog wants to be on the air as well, wants to get into the act.
Yes.
Now, you said in your email to us that you're having problems with your computer slowing down because it's got all sorts of stuff on it. Fix-It Utilities and PC Health, and then you downloaded AVG, and then you put a firewall on there from Zone Alarm, and now it's like you're swimming in molasses.
Well, yes, exactly. And it just doesn't work. And I said, can you have too much, you know?
Ah.
Yes, you can have too much. They can get out there and start boxing each other, and they're too busy trying to protect you from the world that they forget that you want to be able to get out to the Internet world. What I would suggest to do, and Ed, you can correct me as we go down this line, I would probably be more inclined to... You're running a Windows machine, correct?
What version?
What version?
Well, it's been updated to 8, which is, I guess, I'm sorry I did it, you know.
But in terms of security, Windows 8 has its own security called Windows Defender, and it's excellent.
Does Microsoft Essentials, is that part of Defender as well?
Yes. Yeah. So it's taken over everything. What used to be Microsoft Security Essentials has been incorporated into Windows 8.
Okay, so
one of the good things about Windows 8.
So she's a victim of multiple antivirus programs running at the same time.
In particular, pardon me, Cal, AVG.
So what she should do is remove AVG, remove Zone Alarm as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Because you don't need either one of them. You already have built-in protection.
And Fix-It.
Which one?
Get rid of that. I would go through your programs and features and just look through the list and just start removing a lot of stuff, like your anything that says Internet Explorer toolbar, like you know, Google toolbar, unless you use that heavily, Yahoo toolbar, Bing toolbar, you know, coupon toolbar, anything like that. You could start disable. And like Kel said, start doing...
And
you know, the other ones, what were some of the other security programs?
Take off Zone Alarm, take off AVG.
Right. Well, I did that, and then I thought, you know, I felt unprotected. So I went in and I put Zone back on, and then they put the Zone Virus, which was a disaster. So I tried to take that off, and it says, you know, when you go in and say remove, and it says done.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go back, it's there.
Okay.
Well,
that's
how long ago was this? Because Windows 8 also has an extensive
system restore.
So you can actually go back a week to the point, or 7 days or 4 days to the point before you installed Zone Alarm Antivirus.
Okay.
When did that happen? hun?
Well, probably, I don't know now. It's been a while.
Couple weeks?
Yeah, but wouldn't it just come off if I say remove?
No, because Zone Alarm is a little bit different, and if it's on your computer, if you go to Programs, Zone Alarm, and then under that, you'll find an uninstall Zone Alarm program.
Yeah, and that's what I did.
And
I ran that one, and it says, you know, uninstall, and you see it going all through its little thing, and it finally comes up and says done, you know, and then it says you have to close out your machine and bring it back on, and I do that, and the next time I turn it on, it's back there.
Well, let's go through a couple things here, Dorothy. You, first of all, Windows 8 in and of itself is very well protected.
Okay.
That's one of the good things they did. And it's called Windows Defenders now, and it's just sewn into the system. You don't need to add anything extra to it for yourself and anybody else who's listening out there.
Okay.
Step two is, now, guys, how do we get the stuff off? If I remember correctly, with Windows 8, you would go onto your home screen there, right-click in the bottom right-hand corner, and it should bring up something called All Apps. And when you click on that, it will fill your screen with all of the applications you have installed there. Or you can go to the desktop and find Control Panel and go in through that.
Right.
But in either case, you'll be able to identify the applications you want to get rid of and uninstall them from there. Ed?
Now, there's also, and I did a quick Google on this, and two things came up that I was glad to see. Bleeping Computer and Major Geeks both provide a link to for a Zone Alarm uninstall utility.
Oh, good.
So, and I've used those before because Norton was notorious
for trying
to uninstall programs, and it either fails or it doesn't remove completely because there's three or four tools on there.
Right.
So I went, like I said, I went to Google and I typed in a Zone Alarm uninstall utility, and it's dated February 29th, 2013.
Oh,
so
good.
So it's probably includes, you know, also includes the Windows 8 uninstallation utility. So if Foster's recommendation doesn't work, just Google the Zone Alarm uninstall utility or tool. And
you found that on which one? A Bleeping Computer?
Well, both Bleeping Computers and Major Geeks was the hit. And I've used those utilities provided by those websites before, and they work very well.
Major Geek, huh?
Yeah, that's very reliable websites, both of them.
Very.
Okay.
And like Foster said, stick with the Microsoft tools. For Microsoft includes a great firewall utility and antivirus that's already embedded.
They're both, this is for your information, Dorothy, and anybody else out there using Windows 8. One of the good things they did was that they had put some excellent security on the system itself. Now, guys, doesn't it sound like she might also have gotten a virus somehow because she's got some other things that are going on? So let's take
All those toolbars.
Yeah,
as an
all those toolbars. For instance, unfortunately, what we're finding is that when you installed ABG, it may have also loaded a toolbar on.
Right.
Okay.
And in the install process, you don't always catch it. There's a screen that goes by that says install the ask.com toolbar or something like that.
And also, as one of our, we're going to be talking about this later, the most recent version of the Adobe Flash Player installs another toolbar called the McAfee Site Advisor.
Yes. Oh,
and when if you take the default settings, that adds an entire new toolbar to your Internet Explorer and your Firefox.
So just a word for you, Dorothy, and for anybody else.
Wouldn't I see the toolbar, though?
No, honey. Here's what happens is when you say install, it used to be in the past, if you said install, you say, okay, you can trust them. They're just going to install it. Nowadays, in order to pay for a lot of the free stuff we get, they have these deals with all the, like McAfee, where if you're not careful when you're installing, you miss that screen where you have to uncheck the McAfee thing before you go any further. So just for your sake and everybody else, nowadays when you're installing anything, watch those screens carefully and make sure that, for instance, it's not putting a Google toolbar on, it's not putting an ask.com toolbar, because what you just said was when you open up your internet page, you got a row of like three or four of those different toolbars.
Oh, yeah, I did, yes. Yeah.
And that's all part of that process.
Now, in Internet Explorer, you can go into the Tools dropdown, which should be on there, and select Manage Add-ons. And Manage Add-ons will give you the ability to enable or disable, or I'm sorry, disable all the ones that are enabled.
Right.
And a lot of them will be, you know, Adobe Flash Player, Adobe Reader. You want to keep those enabled. But if you see one called Coupons.
Or ask.com toolbar or Google toolbar, whatever the toolbars are.
Or McAfee Helper, your toolbar.
Exactly. pull those things out. Disable them.
Well, disable the toolbars you don't need to use.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Now, this should help you. If, after all that, you still find that there's some problems, it may be that a virus was introduced, and then you might be good to run something like Malwarebytes, which will run on Windows 8.
Right.
Right.
Now,
right.
And be careful. Not be careful. Malwarebytes is a great product, but during the installation or when it completes, it's going to say, do you wish to enable the trial version of the software?
Yeah.
If you do, it's going to give you a 30-day trial of a fully functional scanner, which is great. But at the end of that, it's going to be, and that will provide you real-time protection. But at the end of the 30 days, it's going to say, would you like to pay $25 for a lifetime
and
subscription?
Essentially,
And you can say, yes, it is great. But if your intention is to only use Malwarebytes as a one-time scanner and maybe run it every month or so, during the install, uncheck the box that says, no, I don't wish to use the trial version.
We love Malwarebytes. We don't like the fact that it's included that little hook in there. Dorothy, I hope we've helped you.
Yes, you have.
Thank you, dear, so much for calling.
And we hope
other folks as well. Back to talk with some more folks in just a moment. Thank you for joining us for the Internet Advisor. Our show today has been pre-recorded because of the March Madness that's going on. And that means that rather than taking live phone calls on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, what we're doing is we're answering emails that you folks have sent in during the week. And that's an excellent way. You know, there are a lot of you folks out there who listen to us over the Michigan Talk Network and the five cities throughout the state of Michigan.
And which five are they?
Oh, let me get that up in front of me and I can tell you. You would answer
Grand
that
Rapids.
Question. There you go. Let's
Once
see. WJRW in Grand Rapids, WJIM in Lansing, WNEM in Saginaw, WKMI in Kalamazoo, and WKLQ in Muskegon. And we're delighted to be able to be in the markets there and talking with you folks. But don't feel like you're left out because, you know, our flagship station is in Detroit, because the email allows that contact us form allows you to get your questions in so that we can answer them here both during the week and on the air.
And, of course, you always remember that you can hear our shows from our podcast at InternetAdvisor.net, or you can pull them off of iTunes as well.
Yep.
And so there's all sorts of places where you can get that information from. And if you are listening on the radio passing through the area, make sure your home radio station carries the Internet Advisor as well.
Ooh, I like that. Smooth, isn't he? He'd be in sales. Hey, speaking of smooth, an old friend of ours is here with us again, and that's Mr. Ben Carpenter. Hi, Ben. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Foster. How about you?
We're doing well out here. We're doing very, very well. So what question does the super computing farmer has for us?
Well, I got a program called QuickBooks.
Yes, right.
And it's a little bit like Office. It's got a lot of bells and whistles in it, and why upgrade if it ain't broke?
Ain't that the truth? Yes, you're absolutely right. QuickBooks is something that I used for a lot of years for invoicing and things like that. Yep, it's a good way.
Anyway, I'm trying to install it on this new computer I got, and I'm not making any headway, and I don't know what the problem is. I know the new computer's a 64-bit system. And I've got the program on two XPs and a 98. And I suspect a 98 might be a 8-bit system, but I'm not sure.
Well, you have an on some XP, right?
Correct.
And you're moving from an XP 32-bit system now to Windows 7, right?
Windows 7, 64-bit.
On a 64-bit.
Yes.
Have you gone back to Intuit? Intuit. That's the company that's the company that owns QuickBooks.
Yeah, I know. Now, I have not gone back to them. I've been kind of busy here and haven't had a chance to work on it a lot. Plus, the fact that I didn't want to spoil things before I got my income tax all done.
Well, good point.
What version of QuickBooks are you trying to load on Windows 7?
2000.
Well, you know, have you tried? Usually, you could just right mouse click on the setup utility that's on the CD, or are these on floppies, Ben? I hate to ask.
It's on a CD. Well, I've got five CDs because I've got a 5-user license.
Okay, so you should be able to right mouse click on the setup utility and select
Running
compatibility.
Oh, running compatibility mode. Right.
Yes. I believe that's it.
No, you're right. I think on Windows 7, it's run-in compatibility mode.
And what
that'll
do is it'll force it to then test it to see what's the best way you should to install this utility. And it'll even search Microsoft's sites. Go ahead, Cal.
According to the Intuit website, it says, quote, Intuit does not recommend using QuickBooks 2007 or earlier on Windows 7.
Well, of course, because they want to sell you the new product.
Oh, man.
So,
well, it's a little bit like Office. It's doggone expensive to upgrade,
yes.
And when you got a 5-user license, it's just a lot worse yet.
Oh, Ben, I used to use Intuit all the time, and the thing that killed me was that when you went from one system, like an operating system, to another, they wanted to put their hands in your pocket. And I'm sorry, but I stopped using them because, partly because of that. That as good as they are, they just charge you every turn. They're almost like, not Adobe, but what's the one that's... anyway, go ahead.
Well, see, they didn't say it wouldn't run. They just said they don't recommend it to run. So, but I think Ed's on to something. You probably have to run it in the XP compatibility mode in order to make it work.
Right. And that way, I believe when you right mouse click on it, that's what it's called, is compatibility mode.
In other words, when you go to load it, right click on the setup instead of left click.
Correct. And I believe you can right mouse click on that and you could do properties on that executable.
One other caveat, though. Remember, he has to be running Windows 7 Professional or Ultimate Edition in order to do that.
I got Professional.
Okay,
that's
then
good.
You're
no, good.
You're good then. Yeah,
Try that. That should work.
And good point, Cal.
I mean, one of the things that happens is when you're running a 64-bit OS is that there's a programs folder that all the programs are installed, you know, program files folder. And we all were used to that, seeing that in XP. But as soon as you run an X or a 64-bit version of the operating system, they have a program folder with a hyphen or in brackets x86, meaning this program or 32-bit programs will be installed in program files with x86.
Okay.
You know, so
it categorizes them.
So you have one programs folder for 64-bit ones and one programs folder for
32.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
But it's worth getting a 64-bit operating system regardless, because the operating system is so much, you know, doggone faster. It just loads quicker. It just screams. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. But, Ben, I would you let us know what happens with that?
Okay, I will.
I would be very interested because it was one of the things that used to make me crazy about Intuit. I think they bought Mint.com at one point and just gutted it and left you where you really didn't have much to use, so you would have to go back to Intuit, my interpretation.
Now, in all fairness to the software people who create this stuff, I mean, it's like, how long do you run a particular piece of software on, you know, some things just don't fit on a new platform, and, you know, they can only support but so long.
Right.
So you kind of have to give them a break.
But it's
on
a
that
serious
one.
Business decision for somebody like Ben, who's got a small business. He's got 5 licenses that he's got to deal with. That's a serious
It's all part of the cost of doing business. So, you know, that's how it ends up getting passed off to the consumer at the end when it's all said and done.
Ask him for a donation, Ben.
I understand. I am sympathetic. Don't get me wrong. But it is the cost of doing business.
I understand that, but I was just trying to avoid an extra expense if I could.
Yeah. You are a frugal farmer.
The other thing is you could just Google how to run programs in compatibility mode in Windows 7, and there's a how-to article on it with several options and the error messages you're going to get that you might typically get if the setup program isn't working properly.
Good idea.
Okay.
Very good. So, all right, Ben.
When I do that, if I get it to run in compatibility mode, can I still run off these other computers? Because right now, the way it's set up, I run one program on several different computers, and everybody can work at the same time.
I think that's just a licensing issue, is what you're asking.
Now, are the other computers going to be running in running XP, or are they running Windows 7?
XP.
Okay, and you're using the Windows 7 computer as, for lack of a better description, the server or where the actual main database resides, right?
That's my intentions.
I would think that those XP machines should be able to talk to that Windows 7 machine. All they're going to be doing is going there to read the database and then execute the actual work on the XP platform. So you should be okay.
Yeah, because the 5 license I got allows me to... all 5 of them be online at the same time.
Right.
Correct.
Right, exactly.
Where's the data stored? Is it data stored on one of the PCs that's networked with all the others, or is it stored online somewhere?
No, it's stored on a PC. They're all networked together.
Okay, good. Okay,
and it's right now. It's stored on a XP machine.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get done working on things, right. I want to get moved over to the Windows 7 machine.
Yeah, well, you know, be nice is at some point in the future, you might be able to use a Microsoft SkyDrive or a Dropbox.
It doesn't work well that way.
Really?
I tried to set up someone with QuickBooks the exact same way you're describing.
Oh, okay.
And it was absolutely horrid. I mean, it had a heck of a time trying to do it that way. But when you decide to go that direction, Ben, leave your XP machine just the way it is, up and running, copy the database over to the new machine and install the software there, then bring it on the network, try it with the other machines. If it doesn't pan out, then just stay on the XP machine with that and continue on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the main XP machine set up, and Windows 7, I use one monitor, one keyboard, one mouse, and just got a switch. I flip them back and forth.
That'll work.
Mm-hmm. One thing to watch out for, Ben, if I remember correctly with Intuit, was that, and QuickBooks, I remember one time they changed the endings, like .qbw, I think was the original one, and then they changed it to something else, so watch out for that. But I think, again, running in the compatibility mode, you probably will avoid some of that problem. Mm-hmm. But do let us know how it works, okay?
Yeah, well, I've got one ending for the main file, and then the backup's got another ending on it.
Exactly. Just let us know how that comes out, because that is a big question for Intuit. Really is the monster. It's the one that handles most businesses, small businesses, small and medium-sized businesses. It's a great program, yeah. But it's a monster. Thank you, Ben. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too.
All right, take care. That's Mr. Ben Carpenter, one of our friends. Back in just a minute to talk with Peggy. And I would once again like to thank my guys who are in studio here, which is Ed Riddell and Cal Carson. Good to have you here, guys. It's a great program today, isn't it? Kind of.
I'd rather be painting or watching paint dry.
Oh, thank you very much.
I love my job.
Rich Luzinski, thank you so much for being our great engineer, and Andy Nichols as well for being the friendly voice that you hear on the phone, our lady queen of the phones.
Those dulcet tones that come to you.
A quick question for you guys before we get to Peggy, who's calling us about updating Adobe. The question I have for you is a friend of mine, Mary, emailed me, and she's trying to make a decision between two devices, essentially, between getting an iPad 4 or getting a MacBook Air. Now, it could be two other products of any kind, but she was saying, is there a place I can go to help me make a decision like this? What sites do you guys go to when you're trying to make a decision on whether to buy a piece of software or compare hardware or whatever?
Well, I mean, sometimes I go to CNET, and sometimes I just straight out do a Google. I'll put in compare iPad to MacBook Air, or compare mm-hmm. iPad to Android device, and see what comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes up, if it's a reputable site that I know of, like CNET or download.com or something like that, or I don't know, maybe a magazine site like maybe
MacWorld or
yeah, that sort of
PC
thing.
World or something
exactly.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Or even maybe Rick Broider's site, you know,
CheapSteak.com. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, CheapSteak.
Yeah. Those sort of sites come up. Then I look at the data that comes up, read it, and digest it with a grain of salt, and then try and figure out whether or not the information that's been given to me is helpful, and then use that with my own common sense and the types of things that I want that device to do, and then I come up with an answer. The other thing is, I ask people that I know
Good point.
Who yeah. have those devices.
Yeah.
Or even better than that, sometimes if you just go into a store, and if you see someone walk by, they got an iPad in their hand, go, hey, can I ask you a couple of questions about that? Believe me, whatever device it is, whether it's an iPad or an Android, the person will love to talk about
yes,
how
they
use
do.
It.
Yeah, especially if you're, yeah.
Well, and that's another thing, is just going to the store, if yeah. it's available, and touching and the both products.
Getting your hands on it, right?
And then also defining what is it you want to accomplish with the device.
That's a very good point. I think maybe even before we do anything else, what is it you want to do with it? Because that will determine the device you get very often.
Yeah, because right? some devices are consumer devices for consuming input,
yeah.
where other devices
which is
for
a lot of
creating
tablets.
Input.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to be clear even before you walk out the door with your wallet, you set those both down, sit down and really think about what is it that I want to do with this thing?
Yeah. It's interesting now, by the way, we're getting into the hybrid device world, where you're actually combining those two things of both having something that's for consuming, like a tablet, And then you can put it back into a keyboard and make it a production device.
Correct.
So a lot of that's out there. Any other sites, Eddie, that you go to?
Well, you know, one thing that Gary always mentioned was ePinions. And yes. I quickly went out to the Wikipedia entry for ePinions. And although they started that, it's about people could write their opinions about products out there and also compare products. And you might find an article out there that relates to your, you know, what you're trying to compare.
Right.
And I agree with Cal. I typically will go into Google and type in a product name and type in comparison chart,
right,
or compare. But one thing I didn't realize about ePinions, that it was purchased by Shopping.com in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that. And eBay picked it up in 2005.
Oh.
And so, and you can write articles for free or review people's free articles on there as well. But apparently, if you want to, you can actually write to be paid, which...
Yeah, one last caveat, I think, in this is that take all reviews with a grain of salt.
Yes.
Always.
Because there are people out there who literally are sandbagging these sites and overloading them, either with hypercritical stuff or with lots of praise. So you can almost take the bell curve.
Yes.
Shave off the two outer ends.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, the five stars and the one star. Throw those out.
Especially on Amazon. When I go, I've noticed that the more, yes, I'm using Amazon, the more I go out there and I find these people, the first person praises it. The next person says, this is a piece of junk.
Yeah.
The next one says, I don't know what that person was saying. The next, oh, my God. It just.
You know, another place that I go for comparisons, believe it or not, is YouTube.
Good, good, good.
Oh,
yes,
yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
That's
Kelly.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a great place to go. Hey, let's get to Peggy is with us here. Hi, Peggy. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. I'm glad to have you with us on the air here. You sent us an email asking about Adobe Flash and their latest update. What was your concern?
Well, I've never had, I had problems with Adobe when I used the Internet Explorer. So I've been using Firefox, and mm-hmm, I have not had a problem.
Okay.
What happened was, on one day, the Adobe updated, my Norton updated, the Norton, I've got a toolbar, they updated things I didn't even ask for, so,
typically.
And they don't normally do that, you know, they just update.
Oh, more and more they are,
toolbar,
though.
Yeah, so, all of a sudden now, everything's freezing. So I thought I would just go back to an older version of Adobe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you go to Adobe now, you can't. They don't have any of their older products that you can download.
Have you tried doing a system restore? That's Ed's
Wayback Machine.
Did it work?
No. I went back maybe as far as I could.
Okay.
And it didn't work. So, you know, and the problem was I let it probably go too far before I did anything about it. So I've just been using the Internet Explorer, and it's not as good as the Firefox. But have you heard why are they not supporting their older products now?
Because time goes by and you must go forward. But let me try.
Even if it doesn't work.
Well, it's because of security. Well, the biggest security problem in the internet right now is Adobe.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to eliminate the necessity of using Adobe products.
Flash.
Yeah. Adobe Flash.
Yes,
Adobe
Flash. The Flash is just driving me crazy.
Now, here's something that might work for you, and you may not even know it. When you, in the past, have done updates to Adobe products or any products, chances are you clicked on it and it downloaded it on your machine. And if you go back and look in that folder in Explorer that says Downloads, you may just find an older version of Adobe Flash in there, which you can go in and reinstall by just double-clicking on it, and it'll reinstall it because it downloaded the program onto your machine.
Okay, where am I looking?
You're going to go into Windows Explorer.
Uh-huh.
And then you'll look down that tree on the C drive and see if you find a folder that says Downloads.
Or My Downloads?
Or you should go to My Downloads, or right, it'll be underneath your ID, that you, you know, your profile that you have on the machine.
Uh-huh.
Now you're running Vista, right? Did I see? Can you search on that? Can she just search down the left-hand corner?
Well,
of the
I don't know the exact name for that download file because it'll be like Adobe install.
Well, I mean, just search for Adobe.
But she could do a search for the download folder, and then once that folder comes up, she can double-click on it, and then she can see if there's any...
You know,
Go ahead.
But I you know, that's one thing. But what I would do, if this was my computer and you're experiencing problems, I'd go into your control panel, programs and features, uninstall the Adobe Flash, just completely remove it, and then use your browser, go to adobe.com, and then download a fresh copy. Mm. Because more than likely, something has
been corrupted.
I did that.
You did that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying it's still very horribly slow?
Well, I went, I just uninstalled, went to control panel, uninstalled everything, shut the computer down, came back up, went back and downloaded all again.
And it's still just horribly slow?
It freezes.
You know what? It may... Well...
We have,
now,
listen,
somebody said it might be your Vista, but I've not ever had a problem.
You know what?
Vista,
I would something may be interfering with that. You might want to try downloading Malwarebytes. Go to our website, internetadvisor.net. Go to our toolbar, and under the anti-malware section, and stay on the air after the show, we'll describe to you how to download Malwarebytes, and that maybe you have something else.
Oh, you know what?
On
what did I just download from you guys? Hold on.
I tell you what, Piggy. We'll talk with you offline right now, okay? But thank you very much for calling. So hang on. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll talk with you at the end of the program here. Hey, for the rest of you out there, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. If you have a question for us, get on that Contact Us button and send us your question by email. We'll be happy to look at it during the week and then maybe even talk to you the next time the Internet Advisor visits your neighborhood. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally-produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.